its current state here on WKAR, and what's been the coldest January since 1977 for many places in Michigan, is just about behind us. What a shame to see it almost in the rearview mirror. To review and update some of this frigid month's top Michigan news stories, current state welcomes Tim Skubick, host of Michigan Public TV's Off the Record. TS, good to see you.
I was sleeping on that date.
Okay. That was a whole month. Oh, on November 6th.
Yes,
I see what you're saying. Bill Ballinger of the Inside Michigan Politics Newsletter. Bill, good to see you. Good morning. And we also welcome back Emily Lawler of MERS. Greetings.
Thanks for having me.
Earlier in the month, the Department of Treasury announced a nearly billion-dollar budget surplus. The governor made reference to this money in his State of the State. He urged that we avoid thinking only in terms of a tax cut and only in terms of new spending. But he did go on to say that he is open to tax relief, and he went on to make this suggestion.
When I talk about tax relief, the people that come to mind in particular are those hardworking Michiganders that get up every day, they pack their lunch to go to work, they work hard all day, they come home tired, and when after they get home, they're worried about their bills. I don't think we can solve all their issues, but we can help. So when we have this discussion, let's try to stay focused on making sure we're being fiscally responsible, not just for us, but for our children. But let's also work hard to say where it goes, and it should go to those hardworking folk.
Now, there was movement in both the Senate and the House on this front as recently as yesterday. What's been happening?
Well, the governor said just before that, let's not play politics with this, which was, I don't know why he bothered to even put that in the speech. I guess he needed to do that just to keep his wife happy or whatever, because obviously politics is driving this debate. If the governor left to his druthers, he would not be touching any of the surplus to give it back. Do we agree?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, it's an election year, but I think that the legislators are the ones looking for this in an election year.
All right, so you have Jack Brandenburg yesterday, Senate Finance Chair, kick out a lowering of the income tax rate stretched out over 4 years. You have the specter of the House Republicans saying, yeah, let's do it, but let's do it a little differently. And the stuff that I'm hearing is that is DOA, because the governor's not going there. And so these guys and ladies can talk about this, but he's going to do $100 million of targeted tax relief at the group that he mentioned in that sound bite with a trigger mechanism that says basically if the economy goes south, we stop what we're doing until we can afford to do it. He will say this in his budget next week, that this is the responsible thing to do. But then in Lansing, when has responsible ever driven this beast?
So how much tension between the legislature and the governor over this?
I think there's tension within chambers even. Jack Brandenburg is the chair of the Senate Finance Committee, passed his proposal out yesterday of the committee, and there's question as to, you know, when, if ever, that's going to be taken up on the floor. And then the House version has some sort of trigger involved. There's no trigger in the Senate version. I think there's a lot of different factions trying to figure out how to make this happen.
And now Dems have been calling for a proposal that they talk a lot about, the earned income tax credit, the pension tax. Does any kind of rollback on those fronts have a future here?
Probably not with a Republican-controlled legislature
right.
and a Republican governor. I think there is tension on this issue, on whether or not to have a tax cut or not, between a Republican-controlled legislature and a Republican governor. That's what makes it interesting and different, obviously, than between, let's say, Jennifer Granholm, a Democrat, if this was a scenario 6 years ago, and a Republican-controlled legislature, because all of these people are running for re-election or election, and for the governor to basically say to his majority Republicans in the House and Senate, forget it, I'm not going to give you this, I'm not going to sign it, that could create some tension within the party, which, as you and I know, is already there.
Is there any kind of Tim? You alluded to some of the parts of the budget message. What else do we know? We know about early childhood, for example.
Well, we know the education is going to get more money because everybody loves that in an election year. Okay, we know that the cities may get a little more. You know what? At the end of the day, it really doesn't matter. Okay, they're going to work this thing out, and they'll give areas that need more money, and they'll try to do as much as they can with the surplus and try to get by and hope that it works. It does matter. I don't know why I said that.
Well, it just doesn't matter much because you can't give any of these interests very much.
Right.
Relief or cutting or spending or
$300
whatever.
$300 million in a $14 billion budget is, as the senator said, in the ocean.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And using it to satisfy everybody might end up satisfying nobody.
Precisely.
Right.
Now, a coalition of labor and other rights groups called Raise Michigan has launched an effort to put a minimum wage before state voters in November. Here's Frank Houston of a Michigan restaurant workers group, Rock Michigan, from earlier this week here on Current State.
If you're a family of three and there's one full-time minimum wage worker as you're the primary breadwinner of the family, that family is living in poverty right now. So the idea is by raising the minimum wage, even slightly, you know, a couple bucks here we're talking about, this isn't, you know, huge money, that does have a huge impact on families that are struggling to stay above the poverty line.
This issue is heating up. Will Michigan voters be looking at a ballot proposal in November for a higher minimum wage?
If anybody's looking at it, it's going to be Michigan voters. I don't think that the legislature has much interest in taking this up, even though, as I understand, they did kind of preempt a ballot proposal last time this issue came up in 2006.
Okay. Bill?
Yeah, Tim and I remember when we went through this scenario before, back in 2005, 2006. It was interesting to me to note the contrast between the reaction of the Republicans then and today. Then the Republicans were really worried about a ballot proposal getting on the ballot, and they said, we'll hike the income tax, or excuse me, the minimum wage ourselves here in the legislature, because they were afraid the ballot proposal not only would turn out Democrats, but that it might be a far more severe hike in the tax than the business community and the Republicans wanted. Now I'm hearing, like Emily indicates, kind of deafening silence. The Republicans aren't reacting
yet. Well, I don't think it's completely deafening. When I talked to the Speaker, Jace Bulger, the other day, he did not close the door or open the door, for that matter, to compromising on this issue. But you could make the case that even though the Senate is not competitive, which it was in 2006, the House is. Five seats is maybe a steep climb, but it's doable. And if you drive up that Democratic base to the polls, I think Mr. Bulger is smart enough to know that some of his swing seats could be in jeopardy. So does he talk to the coalition about working out a deal? I don't rule it out. I'm not saying that he said that, but this is early. First of all, they have to demonstrate that they can get the names. And the polling data suggests they can get the votes. And those are two key elements. And if those fall into place, you might find some Republicans at the table saying, well, maybe we can work out a deal.
Hmm.
I think there is going to be some national interest here. We've had
that's really another piece to this whole thing. This has become a really big national debate.
Definitely, and if some of that can parlay into Michigan in terms of dollars and in terms of maybe staff or support or polling, I think that would really help the effort here in the state.
If it makes it to the ballot,
passes.
Oh, I think so too.
Don't even have to.
It looks like it would pass. All the polls that have been taken 6 years ago and today show it would pass.
Okay, we're hearing a lot of familiar arguments. Is there anything? I mean, from Republicans, it's a jobs killer. From Dems, it's overdue and especially appropriate, given the unemployment second highest in the nation here in this state. Has the debate has changed then?
Well, a little bit. Remember also, though, you talk about at the national level, they can't have ballot proposals at the national level. And there's no positive response from John Boehner and the Republicans in the House in Washington to the president's entreaties over let's hike the minimum wage. But here in Michigan, because of what Tim pointed out, the threat of a ballot proposal, that is what would move legislators to say, okay, we're going to have to do something.
And Inside Michigan Politics did some polling on this.
Right. And it showed overwhelming support for a minimum wage hike.
It depends on what the dollar amount is. If you're talking 15, 20 bucks, non-starter. But if you're around 10 bucks, as the president said, 10, I think that's in the neighborhood. This story will drag on and we'll follow it over the next coming months.
Many election watchers were surprised in January when it was disclosed that the UAW's Bob King approached Senator Whitmer about reconsidering a run for governor. This, of course, some months after the party tried to rally the troops around Mark Schauer. Here's how the senator updated that situation here on Current State shortly thereafter.
I think it's, we all just want to turn the page, frankly. I think Mark has got all the right values. I think he is going to be a strong opponent for the governor, and I'm excited to be supporting him.
Is second guessing of the Schauer candidacy by Democrats over now?
I think so, and I've come to see that as less of a criticism of Mark Schauer and more of a desire for Gretchen Whitmer to run for something. I mean, she's a great candidate. She's been really solid on women's issues, which is a key demographic, and I think that people really wanted to see her try to take the governor's seat.
I think it's over until the Republicans run a commercial that says not even Bob King liked Mark Schauer.
Well, in the event that Governor Snyder is reelected, it would probably kick up some amount of hand-wringing after the fact, right? Shouldn't we have worked harder at another candidate?
For the moment, the story is over. The reason I bring that up is I think the Republicans will use it against them. They'd be silly not to. Here you got the guy who runs the largest labor group in the state asking somebody else to run because, well, why? Because Mark Schauer's not any good? It's over for the moment, but I don't think the story is over.
Hmm. Is it known how King's discussion with Senator Whitmer went over with the rank and file? Do we know that?
I think most people are not really paying that much attention to it, even among the insiders and legislators. I tend to disagree with Tim. I think this is a non-story. I don't think it's going to last. I don't think it's going to be probably even used by the Republicans. I don't think people are going to be making up their mind who to vote for in November based on the fact that Bob King met with Gretchen Whitmer back in January about whether or not Schauer should stay in the race or somebody else should get in his stead. I just don't think it's going to be a factor. Mm-hmm. It's a one-week blip because there's nothing else to talk about at that time.
I agree with Bill.
I think going forward, it could, kind of frame the discussion a little bit differently. Is Schauer a second-tier candidate or a second choice? I think that's going to kind of hang over the Democrats' heads for a little bit.
Michigan, we're reviewing January's top Michigan news stories with Tim Skubick of Off the Record, Bill Ballinger of Inside Michigan Politics, and Emily Lawler of MERS News. Michigan will likely become about the 21st state, the 21st, if memory serves, to call on the federal government to call a constitutional convention to enact a balanced budget amendment with the governor's blessing, which he gave in his State of the State. 34 states would oblige the feds to act. Senator Mike Green on this program suggested it would pass soon. How big of a deal is this?
Well, it'll be a big deal if they hit 34.
It's a long story with Michigan being one more link in the chain.
And there's a huge debate over whether the states that have adopted the correct language. So you're going to be in the courts before you're going to be in the Congress before you get this story done.
Well, if it becomes a constitutional amendment, I mean, one of the biggest counter arguments is that it assigns a great deal more responsibility to the judicial sector here. Since it will become a matter of law, so that is one of the recurring arguments against this thing. The governor has also proposed that $350 million in Michigan tobacco settlement money go to help Detroit over 20 years to pay for city workers' pensions and to assist the Detroit Institute of Arts. What triggered this proposal?
I think that the governor is looking around and saying that these Detroit pensioners don't necessarily live in Detroit. There are people in other districts. There are people who have worked in Detroit but don't live there. And, there's a fundamental unfair feeling to the fact that you've worked all your life, you were promised X amount, and now you're not going to get it because no fault of your own.
I think this may have been triggered by him being called in by a federal judge that says you better do something.
Mm.
Mr. Rosen.
Okay.
Said you've got to do something, and I take the governor at his word that he wants to help Detroit, but you had the prospect this week of the Fitch Credit Rating Agency dumping all over this proposal in a very harshly worded letter from the Wall Street folks, basically saying the governor has ignored the general bondholders, that hallowed group of investors in our country, okay, and picking pensioners over them, an us versus them strategy. Not exactly the kind of thing you want dumped in the legislative hopper when you're trying to sell this to lawmakers, because they will hold up the Fitch letter and say, how can I possibly do this, Governor? Because this could affect our overall state credit rating, even though the letter didn't say that. But it was certainly clearly written in between the lines.
In addition to what Emily and Tim just said, I just point out that the governor, you'll notice, isn't proposing general revenue tax money. He's proposing tobacco settlement money. It's like free money out there that most people thought, isn't that all gone? Didn't we use that up years ago? And he's saying basically, legislature, don't worry. I'm not going to tamper with the general fund. You can still maybe try and get a tax cut bill moving, even though I'm going to veto it. And, you know, this is free money. So I think the governor is trying to cover his you-know-what to a certain extent because of the federal judge, as Tim just pointed out. I think this is part of his tactic in doing it.
This triggered an interesting series of questions here this week. Who rides herd on the tobacco settlement money? Is that known?
Well, I think it's Treasury, the Department of Treasury.
Yeah, but it's going to the Department of Community Health. It's going to the Strategic Fund and a couple of different areas.
So some are going to smoking cessation.
That was my next question.
$0 are going to smoking cessation efforts.
Although the state is spending $1.5 million on
that
smoking
money,
cessation.
And that money comes out of the tobacco tax and not the tobacco settlement money.
Very interesting.
And it's not a violation of the agreement, because the agreement apparently was written so that they could do whatever they wanted with the money, which is the way the politicians love it.
Now, this was a big controversy 10 years ago about whether this should be using for tobacco cessation.
The new international trade crossing, which we haven't heard too much about in a while, made it back into the news recently. MERS reported the governor's been lobbying the Michigan congressional delegation for support on construction of the Customs Plaza. Break this down for us, Emily.
Right. So there was a big hubbub and celebration when they got the presidential permit for the bridge, and it turns out we need a little more help from our friends in Washington to make this bridge happen. We need a Customs Plaza, and with Ray LaHood, Secretary of Transportation, gone at the federal level, I think that we're having a hard time building support and getting the money for that plaza.
Well, what was driving this story was the quote from Kurt Steidel, the MDOT director, who said, no plaza, no bridge,
right.
Which is, I thought, a pretty good quote. And then I talked to the governor. Of course, he would never want to make news with a good quote, so he wouldn't buy that language. But he conceded the point that when you come off the bridge back into Michigan, you have to go through a plaza, and there has to be one. And the feds are currently sitting on the money, and he's not freed it up, but he's encouraged that the congressional delegation will eventually put the heat on them. Homeland Security apparently is the fly in the ointment here to free up that money. Homeland Security wants Canada pay for that, too.
That's
not as if Canada hasn't paid for everything. Now they want the plaza as well.
That's the heart of the dispute, is who pays for this thing?
Well, and
right?
You could argue that Canada's sort of suggesting to pay its fair share of the bridge, and now they want, you know, another pound of flesh.
And Matty money figures into this, too.
Well, you don't know. Yeah, I mean, show me.
He has contributed to Wahlberg's campaign.
Your point.
Candace
Your point.
Miller's point.
What are you saying?
That's more resistance in the legislature.
Well, just because he made campaign contributions doesn't mean he's getting what he wants.
Okay. Not relevant, Emily?
I mean, it may be, but he's got a lot of avenues, not the least of which is legal remedies, so I'm not sure that Congress people are his first resort.
Well, I doubt if he's contributed to the Obama administration, and aren't they the ones that are holding up the plaza right now?
I see. Now, how recently did the governor travel to D.C.? I mean, he lobbied our delegation. Does that officially fall into the month of January? I'm trying to remember.
Well, he was in Washington. I don't know if he lobbied the delegation on that visit last week.
And I know the story in MERS, Emily, referred to the possibility that Mike Duggan may have better inroads to the White House than the governor.
Yeah, I mean, he's a hot new topic and a Democrat in Detroit, so he may have a little bit more sway.
The governor's standing with the White House may have gone down a couple of notches when he signed that, what was that law? Right to work?
Right to something. Freedom?
He may have lost his entree to the West Wing, and that's why Mr. Duggan might be called in, because he can get in there easier.
Are we done hearing about Dave Ajima? Until he posts another bombshell to his Facebook page.
Yeah, you're only done hearing about Dave Ajima for so long, I'm afraid, between Facebook posts. But I think that it'll become, if the Republicans make it an issue, we'll hear about it for longer. If they decide that they want to take some sort of action to change the rules and remove him from office.
Could this become a non-story after a while? Is this going to be forgotten or not? I guess
it's become a non-story before, when Republican spokespeople or officials have made unseemly comments and there's a huge hullabaloo and it blows away. The problem or question is, as Emily was addressing, is he going to shut up? Is he going to stop tweeting? Is he going to stop passing along other people's tweets? The idea of Dave Ajima voluntarily stepping aside, I just don't think it's in his DNA. Have you ever met or talked to him, Mark?
I have not. I've watched videos online.
Yeah, that's let me know when you do. I want to be there for that conversation.
Okay. What are you suggesting exactly?
I'm suggesting that he's a iconic lone, he looks like he should be chiseled on the back of a silver dollar. And he's arrogant, proud, tall, defiant. He was a former fighter pilot. The idea that he's going to meekly step aside because he's embarrassed a few of his fellow Republicans, it ain't going to happen.
Dave Ajima was the first airline pilot in the country to fly a plane after 9/11. And he could hardly wait to get into the cockpit with his gun.
Exactly. So he's not.
That's quite a story.
Well, it is. He is a very interesting figure. I mean, all the news about him has been negative recently. But the point is, he's not going to back down, and he's not going to meekly bow to Betsy DeVos or Bobby Shostak or Reince Priebus or anybody else.
Okay.
They're going to have to drag him. They're literally going to have to find a maneuver to get him out of office. And if they did, the Republicans realize they've got a huge, ugly, messy battle on their hands internally to replace him, and the backlash from the Tea Party and libertarian types in the Republican Party against the removal of Ajima would be huge within the party, and they want to avoid that at all costs.
He did apologize for the comments regarding the Muslims, that they had not contributed anything to America, but Bill is right. Give this guy credit. He is saying what he believes, and he does have some supporters in the party who say, this is America, you do have the right to free speech, but many of these establishment Republicans look at this as saying, yes, but is this hurting our fundraising efforts, our candidate recruiting, and it goes to the very heart of what we are about, which is winning elections. Does this get in the way of that? And the jury is out on that. But he does have supporters who say, David, right on.
Yeah, this is not, though, what a national committeeman should be doing.
It's not in the job description.
It's not in the job description.
Okay.
Traditionally, these people in each party have been team players who've raised money. They would never have been the kind of outspoken, brash, First Amendment types that Dave Ajima is.
January's been a pretty busy month. What got lost in the shuffle? Did anything get lost in the shuffle? Anything underreported or overlooked in January?
I've got an unusual one for you. There's some generally accepted agricultural management practices rules that a committee is considering changing at the state level. And basically, small farmers are complaining that this could, as the rules are written now, outlaw like livestock in areas that are zoned residential. So there's a lot of small backyard chicken farmers.
This is the backyard chicken story.
This is the backyard chicken story.
What are you going to do with yours?
But, you know, I think that this could affect a lot of people if these changes go through. So.
I got nothing on that front.
Okay. Farm bill? Farm bill, particular impact on Michigan here?
Well, it's going to keep the price of milk down where it should be, Mark. I was getting very upset. I'm a big milk drinker, and they were saying that thing was going to go up to $7 or $8 a gallon if we didn't pass a farm bill.
Debbie Stabenow, I was very happy. This has taken her a long time.
Yeah.
And this is probably an example where the process worked. It always took longer than she wanted. But there was a compromise here. They backed off a little bit on the food stamps. So people are going to take a hit, but it wasn't going to be as big as it was. So in the grand scheme of things, this probably was a good piece of legislation.
Yeah, I think what it does, too, is give farmers more certainty in planning financially. And that's always a good thing to agriculture in our state.
What are you all covering today? What are you looking at today?
The recent hunting seasons.
Okay.
Do you know we could have as many as 3 proposals on a wolf hunt on the ballot in November?
Talk about confusing the voters.
For the first time in history.
To what end?
Whether there should be one or not. We just had one, but remember we had a hunting season on mourning doves 7 years ago.
Right.
And then the voters said no more, and that was it. It could happen again.
I'm working on what do we do about the school kids who have been in the snow piles longer than in the classroom. We just had Mike Flanagan on the Off the Record show this week, tomorrow night on all of your public TV stations.
WKAR-TV.
Yes, there, thank you, Marky. And he said, look it, tacking on 5 minutes or 30 minutes at the end of the day is, quote, insane. Because you all know, do you remember sitting in school looking at the clock, waiting for the bell to ring?
Yeah.
Right. Okay, we tack on an extra 5 minutes. There's no learning going on there. Probably not in three. He says we need to tack on 1 day for every day lost over 6. So that's what we're working on.
Tim, I have a hard time sitting in school in the summer when it's nice outside.
Well, that is a potential problem. And, of course, Andy Shore, state Democratic representative from Lansing, has a solution. Move up the start of school before Labor Day. Not going to happen.
Whoa.
A lot of kids are in school early in the day to begin with. I mean, the thought of making it longer into the afternoon, I can't process that.
Well,
I know kids.
It is an important issue because obviously this winter the kids have lost a lot of school and they get 6 freebies. And most people in those districts are there or will be on it, before this is all over.
We want to thank all 3 of our guests here today for Current State's Month in Review. Tim Skubick, host of Off the Record on Michigan Public Television. Bill Ballinger of the Inside Michigan Politics Newsletter. Emily Lawler of MERS. Many thanks to all of you.
Thanks, Marky.